By the end of the sermon today, at the end of the sermon today, I'm going to be actually recommending that we imitate a characteristic that Stalin and his military machine in the mid-1940s, about as evil of a group maybe as you can imagine, I'm going to be pushing us to imitate something about them. And in the middle of the sermon, I'm going to be talking about this group of missionaries. It's very easy to respect great intentions, great suffering for others, and I'm going to be warning us not to be like them in a certain way. And so we have like Stalin, who would be right up there next to Hitler as like evilest people of the last century, and we've got these missionaries, but I'm going to be telling us to be like this group in a way and not like that group. And we've got this first image here of this kind of confused guy that we're going to flip to, hopefully. And if you listened to me and you heard this stuff about Stalin and Russia, and you heard this stuff about the missionaries, you might be like, I'm already confused. Like, we're two statements in, and I'm already not understanding. And maybe you're like, who's Stalin? I don't know what you're talking about, Jake. Or maybe you know about that, right? But before we get into the middle and the end that I'm talking about, let's start with how do you handle in your life when you feel confused or when you feel like, I don't understand this? Because there's something in humans, I think all humans of all time, when we see something doesn't fit together, when there's not a resolution, when there's some sort of conflict or something doesn't make sense, we have this desire for it to come together, to make sense of two things that don't make sense. But modern people who have watched a lot of TV and a lot of whatever other programming, a lot of media, we've had that thing inside of us that doesn't like dissonance, that doesn't like things that don't fit, we've had it manipulated a lot. There's a ton of TV shows where the last moment of the show, there's like, there's a box, and we don't know what's in the box. You know, and then Netflix asks you, like, do you want to watch the next episode, right? Like, I mean, like, that's a lot of shows are that. Like, there's a door, and we don't know what's behind the door, right? And then the chapter ends, or the next show. And for most of us, we've gotten very used to, if I just sit on this couch a little longer, everything will make sense. And we're kind of like, we're kind of used to that feeling. Like, I don't really like being confused, but I'm okay with just sitting here until it all works out. Thomas Edison, who lived before Netflix, maybe invented more things than any other American, he said, you know, a lot of us miss our best opportunities because when it shows up, it's wearing overalls and it looks a lot like work, you know, like, and so we miss it, right? You can't necessarily sit on the couch and reach a new understanding that really matters, right? Today, the passage we're going to be reading in John, Jesus opens with a question that's worth holding on to. He says, do you understand what I've done for you? Do you understand what I've done for you? It's a deep question, right? And today, as we go through this sermon, my hope is we'll wrestle with, do we really understand what Jesus and following Jesus is about? Like, have we been doing it right? So we're going to be in John chapter 13. I opened up my Bible there. If you've got a Bible, please open up to John chapter 13. We're going to start in verse 12. If you don't have a Bible, there's a little rack right in front of you with some Bibles in it. You can pull one of those out. There's a table of contents right in the front. You can flip to. Why do we do that? Why do we get these Bibles out and actually open them? It helps us focus, right? We could use all the help we can get when it comes to focus. But it's the Word of God, right? It's worth the effort of opening it up, right? So open it up. I'm going to be referring around chapter 13 a little bit today. So even more than a normal week, it's going to be good to have it open up in front of you. But chapter 13, it's the big 13 in the book of John. And then you're looking for the little tiny 12. And if you were here last week, Jesus washed the disciples' feet. That was a job nobody wanted to do back then. It was a job kind of the lowest person in the room would do, but Jesus
did it for everybody, surprised everybody during their dinner. In verse 12, it says, when Jesus had finished washing his disciples' feet, Jesus put his regular clothes on. He'd had like a servant's towel wrapped around him. He put his clothes on and returned to his place at the meal. And here's that question I started with. It says, do you understand what I have done for you? Jesus asked them, verse 13, you call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Jesus has all this confidence, right? Like, I am your teacher. I am your Lord. Like, I'm the one that should be telling you what to do. But verse 14, now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. This idea that if Jesus is not too high and mighty and too good to do the job that no one else wants to do, then we also shouldn't be too good to do the job that no one else wants to do, right? We should wash the dishes, you know, even if we didn't get them all dirty, right? Or when the kids at dinner need something else, you know, they need more ketchup or whatever, nobody wants to get up. Like, everybody just wants to eat, right? But maybe we should be the one to get up and help the kids. Nobody wants to help their friend move, but maybe we should be the one to actually do it, right? Verse 15, I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. The kids were memorizing scripture today. I love the scripture that the youth picked. Like, really good scriptures. Verse 15 is not a famous one to memorize, but like, that would be one that's worth mulling over, right? Jesus has set us an example that we should do as he has done for us. Verse 16, very truly I tell you, this is Jesus' way of saying, like, listen up. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who has sent him. Jesus repeats himself there with like the emphasis because he knows how hard it is for us to really get that we're not too good to do other stuff for other people. Like, we forget that so quick, right? Verse 17, here's the secret recipe, right? Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. It echoes a lot of the end of the Sermon on the Mount. The blessing doesn't come from knowing a whole bunch, what we might call like a theology, right? Of just like the right knowledge. The blessing doesn't come from a lot of like do's and don'ts on a list, like ethics. Getting some of these thoughts from John Mark Comer, right? But he says the blessing comes in the doing of the things that Jesus has told us to do. It's like that's what opens up our hands to be filled by God, right? When we do the next right thing that he's told us to do, we're ready to receive good things from him. We got into some of that the last few weeks, right? So I mentioned that thing about missionaries, and I'm going to get there, because when we read this on a surface level, if you already believe in Jesus, if you're already trying to do the next right thing, it's easy to read this and kind of be like, okay, like, I need to do more. I need to try harder. I need to do all those things that no one else is willing to do. And I've got a picture here of a branch that I looked for a long time for the right branch that I felt like would represent some of my friends that I got to know. These are folks that I had known for years, folks that left their home country, left their friends and family, lived in what a lot of us would consider like really harsh poverty. They spent most of their time not making a lot of money, but trying to help other people improve, right? Trying to teach kids how to read and help people get out of shacks, and like, they're doing all this like really good work that most people don't want to do. Feels very much like they're doing what Jesus said, right? I was really surprised to get to know them better and find out that in many ways they were like this branch. So if you notice some stuff about this branch, one, the first thing I noticed is like all those leaves are brown, right? And you're wondering, like, is it fall time that it's just naturally like this is the time to like slow down? Or is it just like dried out? And then the only color that you really see, there's some sort of bluish fruit that's there. And if I had to describe some of my friends that I knew that were serving Jesus in this way, there wasn't a lot of vibrancy in them. There was a lot of like dried out tiredness. And the only real like color would be there was some fruit in their life. Like they were doing some good stuff to help other people. But what was surprising to me was their inside condition wasn't necessarily the same color as the fruit that they were producing, right? And if you might not see this, it's hard to see, but right there at the bottom, that stick is not connected to anything, right? It used to be, but at this point, it's separated from the trunk or the branch that kept it alive on the inside. And so these folks that I knew when I was living in Mexico, some of them had been helping people for hours and hours, long hours every day, but it had been a long time since they had read the Bible. Like, as weird as that sounds, like, you're a Christian missionary, and like, you're not reading the Bible anymore, and like, you're not really praying very much, and you just start to dry out spiritually. And it's not that they were bad people. Like, these are people I respect, but they got something backwards that is like, it's like such a, it's hard not to respect them, and that you see, like, even with all these good intentions, doesn't mean they went to the right spot. So Jesus gives us two commandments that he says are the greatest. But I think what my friends have done is they've flipped those around. See, Jesus says the second greatest commandment is to love others as yourself. And that is, I mean, literally says it's the second most important thing to do. It's the second most important thing to get right. Basically, if you can do these two things, like, you're good. But if you're around a whole lot of needs, which I think most of us could find a whole lot of needs around us, you can start to chase just helping all the needs you see, helping all the people you see, and at some point, there's nothing left for the greatest commandment, right? Because the greatest commandment, Jesus says, is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. That's the one you do first. And the one you do second is the loving of other people. And if we get it backwards, it's this tragic dry branch experience where you're doing a lot of good things, but you're withering from the inside out. Where you're doing a lot of good things, but you're withering from the inside out. Some of us are in this room right now, and that's how we feel. We feel dry. And you know, I'm not preaching out of Matthew, and that's some, or these other places I was quoting. Even right here in chapter 13, we see this, because it's easy to look at just the verses we read today, but if we're really following Jesus' example, it wasn't just that he washed the feet. If you remember last week when we read like verse 1 or verse 3, if you weren't here, you can kind of look back up the page. Verse 1 and verse 3 talk about Jesus' relationship with God, his power coming from God, his past being in God, and his future being wrapped up in connection with God. It's all about his relationship with God, and then it gets to, so he showed love and did this service. Jesus served out of a fullness from connection with God. He loved God fully, and then he showed love to the people around him. And if we ever get that backwards, we'll dry up. We don't want to dry up, right? So here's the deal. Before, it's not that we shouldn't be washing dishes. It's not that we shouldn't be helping kids when nobody else wants to. It's not that we shouldn't be volunteering in the kids area at Maywood, right? I mean, like, it's easy to see quickly. Like, there's lots of spots where washing of feet, you know, it's not literally probably washing feet in our society, but there's lots of jobs where there's not a crowd of people signing up to do it, right? Where Jesus wants us to do it. But if you've been trying to follow Jesus and it seems super hard and you seem like you keep failing at being Jesus-like with what you say or what you do in those big moments, then you might be falling into that same pattern that my good friends were falling in, right? It's like, I'm trying to do the right thing, but I just don't seem to be able to keep it going. So we're going to get to the Russians, right? That's a weird one, right? Like, Jake, what are you going to tell us about Stalin and all these people? Like, what could they have done that was good, right? If you don't know your history, Here's the thing that was true about Russia in the 40s is Russia and America were kind of allies for a minute for during World War II, obviously, common enemies at least. But things were shaping up by the end of World War II, to be very clear, of like there's going to be a couple of big dogs left and they're not going to like each other, right? And if you were, it's easy to think of it from our perspective, but if you're Russia, it's pretty intimidating to look across the ocean at America, who, you know, Russia had this big army, but the technology was just like terrible compared to America's. America's could project all this force. America has all this stuff going for it. And it's kind of intimidating to be behind and to feel all this pressure to catch up. And some of us in this room feel like in life we're behind and we feel all this pressure to catch up. And if you know anything about Russia, like towards the end of World War II and where they got to even by like 1950, like they caught up a whole lot. So I'm not saying we should follow their morals, but there's something that they did, and we're going to look at one specific example that we could pull some wisdom out of, okay? So we're going to take a deep dive into a long-range bomber from the 40s. Sorry if you're not into that stuff, but this is B-29. If you don't know what that is, huge technological advancement towards the end of World War II. America had this bomber that like nobody else could touch. This was way ahead of its time compared to everybody else. Allowed us to do a bunch of stuff that we couldn't do before just because it could carry so much and fly so far. And they were actually built like in Wichita. Like Boeing had a giant place close to us. There's another plant too. But February 1944, Boeing delivers like 1,000 of them to the government or something, right? During World War II in Japan, a few of these got into trouble and couldn't make it back to American territory, and so they landed in Russia. And Russia was kind of an ally, but like Russia decided, like, we're going to hold on to these planes. Like, here's your pilots. America didn't like that. Right? Here's what Russia decided to do. In 1944, Stalin said, scrap our program, because our bomber is like way behind. I just want you guys to copy the B-29. Imagine being that person, being given that job. Like, here's a plane that's better than any plane that we have by far. How about you make it? Like in my house, when I have a little bit of trim that doesn't fit right, I'm down in my garage like trying to make a piece of wood fit. And like I'm glad for caulk, right? I'm glad to be able to like kind of smooth it together, right? Can you imagine trying to make a whole airplane that's more advanced than anything in your country? Like it's pretty nuts. Not to nerd out too much, but we're going to deep dive a little bit. All of Russia, all their stuff, all their aluminum, it was cut to the metric system. They did not even have like the same sizes of aluminum as what is in this plane. 1 year after they got their B-29s, or took them from us, whatever you say, this is what they had made. This is not the exact plane they made, but they had made a total replica, a flyable replica of the B-29. It's called some crazy Russian word. I forget. I have it written down, but I'm not going to look it up. It's like the TU-4 and then some weird word. I also put in, this is, so back then there were no computers. They had a guy on the plane that like sat up at this giant console and was basically kind of like the computer for the plane. Look at those knobs. Like if you ever worked on a car, can you imagine trying to rebuild something like that from scratch? Like it's just nuts to think about, right? Russia had like 900 factories and research facilities and made like 100,000 drawings of this plane and like worked at it like crazy for a year. And within 3 years, 1947, they were like mass producing them, right? This is their main bomber like up until sometime in the 60s. It's a lot of history, right? Here's the point of all that history. Imagine if Jesus was your example and you were that serious about copying every little detail. Because like three B-29s literally came out of the sky to Russia. And Russia just wasn't like, oh man, that's inspiring. I'm going to go try to make a better plane and just go off and do their best. They thought like, that's better than anything I could ever do. I'm going to throw away my plans. I'm just going to
try to figure out every little detail. And the first thing I'm going to do is try to copy every little detail. I'm not even going to try to understand it. I'm just going to try to copy it. Like, Russia eventually understood this stuff and started making their own stuff. But their first step was just simply to copy it. They had to get special permission to use their own parachutes because the way Stalin had set it up of, like, basically just copy it all. Don't use any of our stuff. Like, they had to write in, like, will you please let us use our own parachutes so we don't have to copy the American parachutes? Imagine if your life was like, I'm just going to look at what Jesus did, and I'm going to just do my best to copy it. And it's not going to just be me. It wasn't like one guy sat around with a bunch of aluminum and made this plane. Like, what if we as a church would say, together, we're going to try to figure out how to copy Jesus. We're going to have the humility to say we're behind. We're not who we want to be. And we've got this golden opportunity that's come down from heaven to us, and we're not going to waste it. We're going to copy every little detail so we can do something that we could never do otherwise. Think about that. Jesus, there's all sorts of details in the gospel, right? At 12, Jesus knew as much as like all the super intellectuals of his culture, and yet he still went home and was submissive to his parents for a lot of years. Think about that. Like, Jesus lived that sort of lifestyle of like working a job that was kind of beneath him, we might put in quotes, right? Of being the smartest guy in the room and still doing what other people said on top of him. Jesus, during the middle of this meal, gets up and does the job that no one else wants to do, right? Jesus spends a lot of time outside with God. Even as he gets busier and busier, it seems like in the Gospels, there's more and more references to him going off and being by himself and praying. As you get busier and busier, what if your life involved like, well, I better get outside more and pray more because things are getting busier, right? Like, if you just said, like, I saw Jesus do it, I don't really understand it, but I'm just going to copy it. There's a lot to figure out, right? When we look at these dials and all this craziness, when you look at the Gospels, there's a lot going on. Like, Jesus was homeless during his ministry years. Should I be homeless? Like, well, like, Jesus didn't have 2 6-year-olds at home and stuff. I mean, like, maybe there's stuff we have to figure out. But, like, what if these were the sort of questions we were asking about, like, I want to us to be like Jesus together. Let's copy what Jesus did. So part of what Jesus did is that he served people in really humble ways. Part of what Jesus did is he had this relationship with God that was vibrant. Like, those things are connected. They're not separate. We're here today as a church, and I want to encourage us to start taking steps so that we can be blessed, right? Jesus said, you're blessed if you do these things. Jesus is our example. If we'll follow his example, we'll be blessed, right? So I was trying to think today, like, what are some actual real steps we can take? Because I don't think it's like, let's all take off our shoes and get a bucket of water, right? Like, I don't think that's the right step. But I was thinking, like, what are stuff that Jesus did? So here's two steps on the, like, being closer to Jesus. And then we'll talk a little bit about the washing of feet. One is something that comes up in the Gospels, if you read them closely, is before Jesus eats, a lot of times, maybe all the time, but I can think of a lot of references, right before he eats, he thanks God. And this is a tradition that kind of like classic American culture has given us of like saying grace, but I think it's rooted in that. Like, I think it's rooted in, like, you can read, like, right before the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus gets the food and he like thanks God for it. And it comes up quite a bit of Jesus thanking God. This sounds super simple. You might feel like, oh, I'm already beyond this. I'm already doing this. But like, are you actually grateful to God before you eat? Like, as simple and as small as that sounds, like, I think, like, if we're not already there, it's not a bad place to start. Like Jesus had gratitude before he ate. What if every time before I eat, I actually check my heart and I'm actually thankful to God for one thing? It could be small. If you're like, oh man, I'm already beyond that, like, just make sure you really are. It's easy to like say some sort of mumbled prayer, or it's easy to do it when you're not around anybody. But just, what if every time before you ate, whether you're around 5,000 people or just your family, what if you said, like, I'm going to actually have gratitude before I do that? It's a very small thing, but we're just copying something that Jesus did. If you're like, I'm up for something harder, Jake, I already do that, you know? I already pray before I eat. Mark chapter 1 talks about Jesus getting up while it was still dark and going out to a lonely place and praying. I'm not even saying we do this all the time. I'm saying, what if one time this week you said, I'm going to get up way before I have any responsibilities. That's a kind of another way to say, while it's still dark, you know when your day starts as far as responsibilities. What if you got up way before your responsibilities, you left wherever you slept at? Because if you go outside, you're probably going to pray a little longer. At least if you're like me and you have kind of short prayers normally. You know, because if you roll over in your bed and like start praying, that's going to be a real short prayer, right? If you get down on your knees right next to your bed, it's probably going to be a pretty short prayer. But if you go walk somewhere, you're going to kind of feel silly if you have a 15-second prayer. You know, like it's going to wind up being a little bit different. And what if you just tried it? You're just like, I don't know what's going to happen when I walk outside, go by myself and pray, but Jesus did it. I'm just going to copy it. I'm just going to act like the Russians in 1944. I'm just going to copy it. I don't have to understand it at first. I just know it's better than me, so I'm going to copy it. So those are our two of like getting closer to God. Don't even try this next thing I'm going to say if you're not up for the getting closer to God part, because you'll wind up like those friends I was talking about. Like if you don't do the closeness to God stuff, like the service stuff isn't healthy. But on the service side, my guess is if you've been having gratitude to God, and especially if you spent some time alone with God, there's going to be a time this week where there's going to be a job to do and some other person around you isn't going to want to do it. It might be as simple as getting up during the hot meal and getting the kids the ketchup for the third time or whatever, right? It might be something really hard that's going to involve your whole Saturday or whatever. But my guess is you'll be in a room and someone will say something and it'll be obvious nobody wants to do this. Or at least like the undertone of the room will be like, nobody's doing the thing that needs to get done. Everybody can smell the litter box, but nobody's cleaned it out, or whatever it is, right? And what if you just said Jesus washed everybody's feet? He didn't talk a whole bunch about it. He just got up from his meal and did the thing that everybody could see needed to be done, but he just did it. And I'm just going to do it. And I think Jesus is probably going to bless me in some way, simply because that's what it says in John 13. It's like, do the things that I did. So do something that nobody else wants to do. Just do it and see what happens. So I know these are like really, nothing that I've said today is rocket science, right? But Jesus didn't say like, go be rocket scientists, right? He said, now that you know this stuff, you'll be blessed if you do it. Like now we as a church, like we know, like Jesus is our example. He's the author and the pioneer of our faith, right? He goes in front of us. And if we just do the things he does, if we just did the stuff he did, we'd be perfect, right? If we just try to copy him, we'd be so much better, right? The Russians, when they built this thing, it wound up like 100 pounds more than the B-29. It was a little different. I bet it wasn't quite as good, to be honest. But they got really close, right? I don't know that we're going to get that close to Jesus in a year, but I bet if we tried super hard to just copy Jesus for a year, I bet we'd be way different. Right? If we just had this tenacious, like, I'm just going to copy everything I can that I know about Jesus. And it starts this week. It starts simply with gratitude before you eat, or with that time alone with him one time this week outside. It starts simply with saying, like, I know no one wants to do it, and finally I found it. Like, you're looking for that chance to serve. Whereas everyone else is looking for a way out, you're looking for a way in to the service that nobody wants to do. It's a very different outlook, right? So I'm going to pray a blessing over us. And a lot of times we will kneel and things like that. If you're able to, I'd like you to stand up and just put your hands out of like, let's open up to what Jesus has for us. Okay, if you guys will put your hands out, I want to pray this as a blessing over us. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and give you peace. It's in Jesus' name we put our hope. Amen.